And we're back for another episode of Keep It. I'm your host, Ira Madison III, and once again, I am joined by Kara Brown.
Hey.
And Louis Vertel.
Oscar, fun fact, I was the stunt double for Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl. All the crying in the mirror, that was me.
Good news, Keep It fans. Kara, Louis, and myself will all be in Austin this weekend for South by Southwest.
It's my favorite Texas. If I had to rank them.
We are doing two shows that weekend. First, we will be appearing on Love or Leave It on March 9th at the Moody Theater. The show is at 10:30 p.m. and tickets are still available.
With that surly little ginger, John Lovett.
Is he a ginger?
I think I would call him a ginger. Chestnut?
I'd call John a lot of things, but I don't know if he's a ginger. Mm-hmm. And then Keep It will have its first live show on Saturday, March 10th at 3:30 at the Fairmont Wisteria Room, part of Tune In at South by Southwest. The show will also be streaming live.
Fairmont Wisteria was my favorite character on Knot's Landing, and I'm so excited she'll be there.
You should see how excited he looks, actually, though. He looks so excited.
Oh, yeah.
Our first live show will be streaming on the internet if you cannot make it to South by Southwest, but if you can make it, we'll be live from the podcast stage. If you have a ticket to South by Southwest, you have a ticket to the show. So stop by and see us, and I promise John will not be there.
Phew.
John won't be there, but Louis will be in a nice tight shirt.
That's right. Yeah. I'll be imposing and severe.
Some house cleaning about last week. I know we were very worried that Stacey Dash might win an election and that we would have to go to the 44th district and stop her. But apparently that district is overwhelmingly Black and Latino. And I don't think she's going to win.
A few. Yeah. She can move back on to the Oscar race.
Also, apparently you can, as a congressional candidate, you do not have to live in your district. You just have to live in the state.
Which is so stupid. That's crazy. You don't even have to live in the district with the people that you're representing.
No, which I should have remembered because that was the whole drama with John Ossoff when he was running.
Right.
That woman kept saying, you don't even live here. But yes, she's talking about the fact that she does live in her district. And
though they don't want her to.
Yeah. You know. So.
Yeah, live in another district,
so
please.
She'll probably lose and get evicted. Anyway, the Oscars were this week, and Stacey did not show up at them this year.
She was nominated for three, though, right?
Yeah, she was nominated for Shape of Water.
Yes, right, and Worst Animated Short, her being herself, Stacey Dash.
We watched the Oscars together.
We did.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We had a grand old time.
There were some sandwiches.
A lot of yelling from me.
Louis was plugged into his laptop.
I looked like somebody in Apollo 13, like getting people back down to Earth, but I was actually just tweeting about.
Also, can I say watching it with Louis was great because he was like a personal Siri where it was like, Louis, when was the last time so-and-so was nominated? And then all, like 2 seconds later, he had the answer. It was
I
like,
put
we
my
didn't
finger
even
up.
Google anything.
You asked me, how old is Rita Moreno? And I said, I believe 86. And I was right.
And she was 86 years old.
Coming up later in the episode, I am actually going to pit you against Louis, Kara.
With help.
Yes. I'm going to let you use Google.
Yes.
And we will see who's better.
And I'll use my brain, the other Google.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm
not that good. We'll see how it goes.
You sound like a Samsung commercial. Anyway, the show was fine. Kara kept complaining that it was 7 hours long.
It was so long.
It was always long.
Was it always like almost 4 hours long?
Yeah, girl. Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
Really? I think in my mind, it was like three and maybe, you know, the DVR goes over a little bit in case it spills over, like 3 hours and 7 minutes. Like we are in hour three and they haven't handed out best screenplay, best actor, best actress, movie, director. I was like, we got five more categories.
And I wanted it to go on and on. I'm like, oh, hold it out. I want there to be another montage. Can we do a montage of
the montages? I think that was what was driving me crazy. The montages. It's like you would cut those out. We're in and out in 3 hours. Also, the camera angles. I don't know who would listen. I've never directed an award show. I'm sure it's not easy. However, up the nose? Do you think that's the most flattering angle?
The angles were actually pretty wild this
year.
Crazy. The set is always huge, but I think with, you know, the crystals that they wanted to put on display on stage just highlighted how cavernous the stage was.
Right.
Everyone was wandering around for what seemed like 20 minutes
to
get
to
and from.
They were all lost in a giant De Beers commercial.
Viola Davis couldn't even walk in her outfit.
I know.
Because it was too tight, and they made her like... They made her perp walk all the way to the stage.
And by the way, do you know what music they played while she did that? The Austin Powers theme? Guys, what? I don't believe she played Minnie in that.
That and, yeah, the montages were... I like Oscar history, and I get that it was the 90th Oscars. So they really wanted to celebrate, you know, the history of the Oscars and the magic and have people, you know, enjoy looking at a clip and being like, oh, I've seen that movie, etc. But like at a certain point it felt like
the montages and the clips, you know, when they're announcing the nominees and they would show a little clip of the performance, those were like 30 seconds long. It took like 5 minutes just to get through all of the Best Picture nominees, and it didn't like enhance the ceremony for me. Like, if you haven't seen The Shape of Water, that 30 second clip is not going to do it for you. Like, just cut to Guillermo and let's go.
I think this is the one show that I could watch for 5 hours a year. I mean, just like, look, yeah. If you're invested in the drama of it, it's just, all I'll say is this. There are entire golf channels. There are entire
football
channels.
I don't watch that shit either.
One day a year, I get to watch Leslie Manville sneer in an audience for a 4-hour ceremony. And I'm just going to cherish that moment and perhaps bring poppers for that moment.
I like a sport with a time limit. Like, we're there's a clock, there's a finite amount of time, we're doing this, we got things to
do. I don't know, I kind of agree with Lewis. I really enjoy Oscar season, and I wish that it were sort of like the Olympics, you know? You just had, like, 2 weeks of these ceremonies and people playing games. You have the wacky racist starring Frances McDormand as Penelope Pitstop, and... Dastardly as Gary Oldman. I don't know. I would watch.
I would add to this joke, except I only know Penelope Pitstop from that show, so I'm sorry.
It's fine. I feel like I make a Penelope Pitstop joke every week here because that's the only one I know. No, I get it. They're long, but I really do sort of love it and appreciate it. I mean, I feel like we watch it all day too. There's the red carpet. There's everything going on.
And
before
we're in LA.
It.
We're in LA, so it really is most of your day, because it's like 3 o'clock when all of this gets started.
Yeah, but let's jump into the actual show, starting with that red carpet.
Oh, man. I was watching the E! Pre-show, and I didn't do the math. I was like, why does it feel like no one is talking to E? And where is Juliana? I thought that she was sitting in, like, Taos, New Mexico, like, doing commentary. And then I realized, oh, Seacrest works for E! Nobody's talking to him. Now I get it.
Right, so Ryan Seacrest had sexual assault allegations against him from his former assistant. She said that he used to hug her creepily without her consent, often when he was wearing his underwear. The allegations were apparently independently investigated by NBC and, you know, E, but she denies that, you know, the investigation was like real, you know. And so he still went ahead with being on the red carpet, which is very weird.
Of course,
very surprising,
because,
I think.
Yeah, because I feel like everyone else who's had a allegation against them has sort of at least taken a step back and been like, I'm not going to make this situation about me right now. You know, I never thought that in the situation with the Oscars, like, Casey Affleck would have more class than Ryan Seacrest to not show up.
But see, I wonder if this is the beginning of some sort of backlash, because you already have dum-dums coming out and being like, is this a witch hunt? And are we moving too quickly? Are we going, you know, you're just firing people right away without investigations and all of that. Never mind that they're private companies. They can do whatever they want. They can fire people. And so I wonder if it was him being like, you know, I didn't get fired and like, fuck you, and I'm still going to show up and I'm still going to do this. Like, I wasn't surprised that he still did it.
Yeah.
I was like, of course he did, because also it's like he has an ego and he doesn't think he did anything wrong. Like, most of these dudes don't think that they did anything wrong, even if, you know, you weren't charged criminally. It's like you did something creepy, but they don't really see a problem with that behavior. And so he doesn't think that he did anything wrong. So, of course, he showed up.
I mean, he was already doing shows like the previous week with Kelly Ripa, just being like, she came out during the week and just gave this nice supportive speech about how he's her friend and he's always
been really nice to me, kind
and supportive to her. I'm like, yeah, I mean, Ryan Seacrest isn't going to be creepy to you, girl. It's your show.
Also, furthermore, you think he would just step back because it would obviously make half the people on the red carpet uncomfortable to talk to him, even just hearing
those charges. And no one talked to him. Barely anybody talked to him. Allison Janney hugged him, which, I mean, that's why Laurie Metcalf should have won.
Allison Janney is 7'1". I assume she couldn't even see him and just hugged randomly.
None of the actresses nominated for Best Actress stopped by to talk to him. Taraji P. Henson talked to him, and I actually want to turn this over to Kara, because everyone said that Taraji shaded him on the red carpet, and you, being, you know, the judge of shade court, was it shade?
You know what? The universe has a way of taking care of the good people. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And then if the next person that she spoke with, she was asked, how are you? And Taraji said, good, now that I'm in your company.
Ooh, that's super shady. The shadiest part of her Ryan Seacrest interaction was she sort of gently grabbed his chin, which is super condescending. And it looked like she sort of looked like a sexy witch. Like, I just...
Yeah, poison apple.
Yes, exactly. Like, I just hexed you and you don't even know it. And so that I found very shady. So, you know, I saw some headlines that said subtle shade, which is redundant, as I have told you over and over again in shade court. But I think it was kind of shady.
Okay. I mean, she gave the full head tilt and the full, like, you know what I mean? Like, clown from It eyes. Yeah. She knew what was up.
Down here, Kat gets more pay than you.
Ooh, yes, Kat Sadler jokes. I always bring that back.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody wanted to talk to Ryan Seacrest, they kept cutting back to, you know, the talking bobbleheads that they had on E! Doing whatever.
No, it was like Juliana being like, Darkest Hour, I mean, you've got to admit, makeup. They're just like hyperventilating.
So the Oscars were filmed at the Dolby Theater, where they usually are, and across the street at the Roosevelt Hotel is where these E! Correspondents were, with a crowd of people behind them, and it was made to look like they were hanging out in some just garden party watching the Oscars, and you kept having people come over and make cocktails and do whatever. I don't know.
And never an interview with, like, Frances McDormand.
Right. Yeah. These people are not supposed to be talking that much during the pre-show is the problem.
Forever.
And this year they were like, so, Juliana, you're leading it.
Juliana's got a riff for, like, 3 hours. Like, dear God.
She doesn't have a tight five either. So she did have to make some stuff up.
I was actually on E!, by the way. I was a part of it.
Oh, I did not ask. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, someone did.
All right.
Lewis.
Can you give us their name and phone number and we can verify that they actually asked?
We didn't ask you to be here during Black History Month.
That's true.
Traipsing in. You carpet bagger.
By the clawing to you people, yes.
Anyway, the carpet.
Yes.
The carpet was fine after that.
Yeah.
And then the show started. And Jimmy Kimmel gave his monologue.
We can't ruin this one. This is a special year. This is a big one. These are the 90th Academy Awards. This is history happening right here. Our friend Oscar. Oscar is 90 years old tonight, which means he's probably at home right now watching Fox News.
Of course, no. He's Oscar probably as best as somebody is going to be at this job, I think. He's the right combination of sarcasm and sincerity, and I usually think hosts are lacking one or the other. Like, they don't go funny enough or dark enough, or they don't go appreciative enough. And he has sort of a knowledge of movie history, I think. So it was actually, for me, mostly a pleasure to watch him host it.
I liked him. I've always liked, like, he's won me over, you know, since The Man Show, which I completely forget that that's why we even have him in the first place.
Yes.
Which is like talk about a
and
rise.
Win Ben Stein's Money, co-hosted by Ben Stein, oh, wow. Among the world's worst people. Go ahead.
He co-hosted Ben Stein's Money?
Yeah, honey. Won an Emmy for it.
I forget most of Jimmy Kimmel's past.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I know that there was The Man Show, and he was at some point attached to Adam Carolla, and then he decided to let Adam Carolla be the villain that he is, mm-hmm. and just sort of skate away scot-free. He's sort of a brand new Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. You forget, and especially this past year.
He looks
year,
great now, too. Well, I'm just like, and he's a being, full makeover.
He's been one of the more outspoken late night hosts where he's like talking about healthcare and talking like, you know, and not just ripping on Trump to be funny, but actually like talking about issues in a real way and trying to like inform people. Mm-hmm. And I think he tried to do that with his monologue when he was, I didn't like where he's like, we're Hollywood, we're leading the charge against sexual assault. It's like, okay, relax.
You're a part of the charge.
Yeah,
you're in the mid to back.
Settle. But other than that, I liked him.
Leading the charge against sexual assault.
Okay. Like he's, I mean, maybe in doing it, perhaps, but in curing it.
Like he's starring in The Profiler. I get it. He is very good, and I have actually come around on Jimmy Kimmel mm-hmm. since, you know, he cried over a lion on TV, I think, during the week of Ferguson. But that was actually a very good monologue that just sort of, it built on what Seth Meyers had done at the Golden Globes, mm-hmm. and this one just really went there. Mm-hmm. It didn't even feel sort of like he was trying to do jokes, like hit punchlines. Mm-hmm. He was literally just going beat by beat, like, mm-hmm. this is the shit we're talking about, and we're going to talk about it, and I don't care who's uncomfortable.
Right, right. Although I do wish he had handed the mic over to Tiffany and Maya after they had showed up.
We are so happy to be here, but a little nervous too, because a few years ago, people were saying that Oscars were so white. And since then, some real progress has been made.
Mm-hmm. But when we came yeah. out together, we know some of you were thinking, are the Oscars too black now?
But we just want to say, don't worry. There are so many more white people to come to.
Mm-hmm. So many. We just came from backstage, yes. and there are tons of them back there.
Tons of them.
Mm-hmm. And not just movie stars. Yep. There are white people walking around with headsets, yep. white people with clipboards.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm personally not a fan of white people with clipboards because I'm always wondering, what are they writing down about me?
Oh, yeah.
Them presenting together was beautiful.
It was amazing.
I didn't expect to have the reaction I did to seeing them. I just screamed Thelma and Louise reboot to no one in particular. They are a perfect duo. Also, just Maya Rudolph is one of those people where she's amazing, but sometimes it seems like it's been a year since I've seen her, and it was so refreshing to see her again.
Well, it was also very refreshing to see her up there with Tiffany Haddish because, you know, Maya Rudolph was the only black woman on SNL forever, and I feel like most of America didn't even know that she was black because they kept having her play random, like, white-seeming characters. And she was surrounded by just a sea of white people. And I don't know, seeing her on stage with Tiffany, I was like, that's Maya.
And when's the last time we had two black people presenting, two people of color, honestly, presenting together at the Oscars? Like, that can't be that often.
Yeah, they threw together a bunch last night. Like Kumail and Lupita presented.
Right. But this felt like, I was like, oh, wow, two of them. It was something like it felt different.
But especially two women of color was right. shocking.
Right.
And that they were just so funny together.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tiffany wore that dress again. Good for you, girl.
Yeah.
Next year, my dream is that Angela Bassett and Ellen Cleghorn perform and do a bit. Actually, they just do full vaudeville. I just want them to dance and stuff.
Also, Paul Thomas Anderson, Maya Rudolph's longtime partner, and he brought up at the Gotham Awards that he wanted to work with Tiffany Haddish, and I guess there are rumblings that it's going forward, and maybe Maya might be involved.
That long-ass ceremony will be worth it if we end up with a Maya Rudolph, Tiffany Haddish, like, Thelma and Louise reboot. Oh. I will concede that.
I'll take Turner and Hooch, any combination. Any duo. Butch Cassidy and She Ready.
They also made a few changes to the ceremony this year. Number one that Kara noticed while we were watching was those big-ass envelopes with the huge lettering to make sure that nobody mixed anything up.
Costume design in giant letters.
Look, if you're giving an envelope
on the front, so it's like if something was happening, the entire audience could be like, "Wrong one."
You could
wrong
see on
one.
You could see on TV, right. Like you're not reading the right one, girl.
Exactly.
You know, Faye Dunaway was like, "The fourth billboard better be this giant envelope. I need to read it like an eye chart."
And then they also had, they kept showing the envelope for Best Picture that they had on like a little easel backstage on like its own altar. And I'm surprised they didn't just have like bulletproof glass behind it also. But they're like, "Don't worry, guys, we're not going to fuck it up this year."
And they kept making jokes about it. And they had Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty come back out and present again after their La La Land snafu. And I get that some people thought it was cute, but I think it was dumb.
It was rude, honestly, to Moonlight.
Because I know that the Moonlight crew turned down the opportunity to present Best Picture, I believe.
Well, no, they turned down the opportunity. I think Jimmy Kimmel said that they asked if Moonlight, if they wanted to come back and sort of like give their speech again. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have
give
like,
your
moment.
Again.
Something like, you know, like come back and have a moment. I didn't read it as that they asked them to present Best Picture. They're like, you can come back and sort of finally get a chance to say what you wanted to say, which is not the same thing. Mm. So I don't know that they got that offer.
So I think that first offer is rude.
Right.
I mean, first of all, you know, they said what they had to say at the end of last year's ceremony. And then the Academy has just proceeded to continue to make jokes about it and, you know, just sort of lean into, like, the fun and the camp of it.
We
keep ignoring the fact that the people involved in this great movie last year basically had their moment ruined forever.
Right.
I'm sorry, I was reading the Wikipedia entry and on the Oscars, and it's still like, La La Land won until producer Jordan Horowitz stepped forward. And I'm like, can we get rid of La La Land in the narrative?
I feel like Jimmy Kimmel at one point also said it was hilarious, or he said something like that. I was like, that's not funny. It's not funny to bring back these two people who screwed up the biggest moment, arguably, in some of these people's career. Also for a film that I think Lewis told me was the first film with an all-black cast to win Best Picture. And it's like, it's not cool that you screwed that up, and to not sort of recognize that you ruined a historic moment.
Also, I understand there was camp value to that moment, but it really felt out of control. Like, it was not comfortable to watch. So it's like, to juxtapose that with the historic nature of that victory is unfortunate.
Speaking of,
also, Faye Dunaway did not look like she wanted to be there.
Can I say
that? Was like, I got to come out here again, and I didn't want to do it the first damn time, which is why I just snatched that envelope and like, let's go. She was just like,
but by the way, any footage of her we can get is priceless, because she's such a particular old school type of celebrity who like gets a salad and is like, the lettuce isn't soft enough. So mean 70-somethings, I want it.
Speaking of mean 70-somethings, Frances McDormand.
Not 70s, all right.
Yeah. How old is Frances McDormand?
That's a good question. I'm thinking she's in the 61 range. This is the first year that Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress were both over the age of 50 since the 1981-82 ceremony. So,
oh, Frances McDormand is only 60.
I said 61. I said in the community of that. They wouldn't fire me on The Price is Right.
Okay. She looked great. She had maybe one of the best moments of the night.
Totally.
She won for 3 Billboards, a movie
outside
that
my tolerance
apparently exists. And she did actually have a very good performance in it. I will admit that I really enjoyed Frances in 3 Billboards. I don't like 3 Billboards, but I enjoyed her. And I enjoyed Sam Rockwell. I was happy for him, too, because I love Sam Rockwell.
It is this weird feeling of, I don't want to say I'm rooting against these veteran actors. Like Allison Janney, same thing. I don't love that movie. I'm happy she has an Oscar, but the world has put me in this position where I'm mad at them.
Frances won Best Actress for 3 Billboards, and she used her speech to talk about, you know, inclusivity in the industry. And, you know, she asked all of the female nominees in every category to stand up so that they could be applauded and people could look around at them, and she
could
say
how few of them there were.
Yes.
There was 7.
There was one woman who stood up and was like in a sea of people alone. Like, you see her looking around.
She was
like,
horrified.
It was so, I mean, it was still a great moment, but it was like, damn.
If I may be so honored to have all the female nominees in every category stand with me in this room tonight. The actors, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will. Come on. The filmmakers, the producers, the directors, the writers, the cinematographer, the composers, the songwriters, the designers. Come on. Okay, look around, everybody. Look around, ladies and gentlemen, because we all have stories to tell and projects we need financed. Don't talk to us about it at the parties tonight. Invite us into your office in a couple days, or you can come to ours, whichever suits you best, and we'll tell you all about them.
I think Emily Gordon tweeted, or she had on her Instagram, the fact that when she stood up, she was over there, like, in the corner, like, away from other people, because she was a screenwriting nominee, and she was, like, had no idea if anyone else was actually going to stand up, and she was doing it. And, like, Frances was, I loved how Frances was like, Meryl, stand up, because everyone else would do it if you do.
And Meryl's in, like, the Louis XIV seat, where she's just in the middle, like puts both arms down, shoots up, so then everybody has no choice but to follow that.
Meryl at the Oscars is pretty much Oprah at, like, the Globes or any other ceremony.
Oh, yeah. No,
like,
the
people
Oscar,
always feel a need to address her because she's sitting there in the front. And I'm sure she's probably like, stop talking to me.
Right. No, the Oscars are Meryl's Legends Ball.
Yeah. So that moment wasn't even surprising because I was rewatching Frances's Oscar win, her previous one for Fargo. And she used that speech to talk about the fact that she loved that people were financing movies with women with very good roles like the one she had in Fargo. And it's just, it's kind of heartbreaking to see that she gave that speech like the fucking
21
90s.
Years ago. Yeah.
And here she is saying the exact same thing, like, give us roles, give us work. And she brought up the word inclusion writer at the end, and some people didn't know what that means.
Most people did not know what it
means. Most people didn't know what it means. I thought it was where Adam Rippon got his harness that he wore
on the red carpet. You going to be on the Match Game after this, honey?
But the inclusion writer was a term created by Stacey L. Smith, who directs the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative at the University of Southern California. According to her, the inclusion writer is just a stipulation that actors and actresses can ask for or demand to have inserted into their contracts, which would require a certain level of diversity amongst the film's cast and crew. Basically, the idea is that 31.4% of speaking characters are female, even though they represent little more than half of the U.S. population. Women represented 4.2% of directors and just 1.4% of composers, and 29% of speaking characters were from non-white racial ethnic groups, compared with nearly 40% in the U.S. So the idea is to take characters, not even main characters, they're not saying, like, you need to replace all the men in your movie with women and non-white people. They're basically just saying the other characters that you see in movies, don't make them white.
And
you see a doctor, you see the neighbor, you see, like, the person's kid's best friend who has to come over, make them non-white.
And I think it also speaks to the idea of challenging people who have the power to. It's sort of recently Jessica Chastain and Octavia Spencer were in a movie together, and Jessica Chastain basically demanded that they get the same salary. And Octavia Spencer, as a black woman, would usually get paid less than this white actress. And so Jessica Chastain is in a position where she is a powerful movie star, and she can say to people, she can say to the powers that be, I'm not going to do this. I'm demanding this. I'm demanding equality. And I think really with someone like Frances McDormand saying that you're talking to the people who, one, have less to lose than others to speak up. And, like, you were in a position where it's like, are they really going to say, sorry, Jessica Chastain, you're fired from the movie now? They might. More likely than not, they're just going to give the black woman her damn money, and that's a victory.
There was kind of a particularly rad moment there of Frances McDormand being like, to all the other Frances McDormands in this room, which is, like, you know, a significant number of the nominees who have that kind of power, like, we can wield it in exactly this way. That was, like, a very interesting, specific Oscar rallying moment, I thought.
And it's helpful to point out that Frances said that it was something that she learned about only a week ago at lunch, you know? So it's not something where, you know, I remember when George Clooney was going off about, like, Oscar's so white and being like, I've always been a champion of diversity. And then, like, you looking at his films and being like, there are never any black people in your movies. George Clooney, Frances, you know, is someone who learned about this. And I truly believe that she wants to now help mm-hmm. her films, you know, have slightly more
and the crew and the crew, because that's the other thing. Like, when you look at all of the technical awards, and like, I don't even want to know the stats on people of color and women getting nominated in the technical awards. I'm sure it's even more abysmal than all of like the acting awards and the writing awards and like female cinematographers. And women know how to do special effects too, guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot was riding on Greta Gerwig at the ceremony just because she was like the only woman nominated in these major categories, except for Rachel Morrison, who was, you know, the first woman nominated for cinematographer.
90 years.
Yeah. and then you even had Jordan Peele being like the first black person to win
for best
screenplay, which means, you know, a black woman hasn't won.
The only time I think a black woman has been nominated in the screenplay category was co-writing Lady Sings the Blues, the Billie Holiday biopic from the 70s with Diana Ross.
We've heard of
it. You know what's crazy? I know, right?
Let me tell you about Billie Holiday, honey.
I also think it's crazy when the Oscars, I don't know if they did that this year, but before they'd be like, Halle Berry is the first black woman. It's like, why are you saying that? That's embarrassing. Like, you're like, hey, isn't it cool? Jordan Peele's the first. No, it's not cool. It's embarrassing. It's terrible.
Right.
You shouldn't be highlighting that like it's a fun fact.
I mean, this is the Academy that still loves to show that clip of Adrian Brody assaulting Halle Berry on the stage. So I don't really think they've gotten the memo yet.
I was going to say, the amount of times I've seen in a montage they call me Mr. Tibbs because we still only have like four iconic black quotes. It's pretty zany.
King Kong ain't got nothing on me.
I had to remember Denzel in... what's the
Training Day?
No. What's that when he won supporting actor?
Oh, Glory.
And Glory, because I was like, what's he doing in that tent? And I couldn't remember the movie. I was like, oh, yeah, Glory. Forgot about that.
I want to say also that the Frances, shall we say, stunt, our favorite word on this show, was so refreshing after a number of strange things throughout the ceremony. First of all, being Kobe Bryant winning for that Dear Basketball short. Have you seen Dear Basketball? Because, dear God. First of all, it is among the worst things I've ever seen win an Oscar. It is just pencil drawings of him shooting baskets and being like, you know what? I love basketball. Then, of course, there were charges against him that were weird. And then Gary Oldman winning. And who having to present it to him? Jane Fonda, who is the queen of hating people like Gary Oldman. So that was also hard for me to watch.
Also very rude that they did not cut to Leslie Manville's reaction during Gary Oldman's speech, because I wanted to see her withering glare.
Wouldn't it be amazing, just to be clear, Leslie Manville and Gary Oldman used to be married, if Gary Oldman won and just Leslie Manville rose and gave a monologue to the camera about why this was so stupid.
She should have Kanye'd him.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
Let's write that spec.
Has anyone ever been Kanye'd at the Oscars before? Are they too dignified for that? There's not Henny being passed around in the audience.
Well, we had the streaker, That was very momentary. Nobody jumped to the podium, I don't think.
No, the only dramatic things are people being like either not wanting their Oscar, like
George C. Scott and Marlon Brando, yeah.
Yeah. Or people just being shady when someone wins and like not clapping for them.
You know what's a good shady moment? Lee Grant, who won in the mid-70s, she was blacklisted for years, and she won for supporting actress for Shampoo. She goes up there, and she's got like the hardest bangs of all time. And she goes, holding the Oscar, she goes, Oscar and I had a fight about 20 years ago. He's changed. I know I haven't. The first Housewives tagline, 1975.
I remember when Eli Kazan
won. Oh, yeah.
And some people didn't clap for him, because he named people to the blacklist. So there's always moments like that where, you know, people, you have to look for reactions in the audience.
Yeah. No one's ever like when Roman Polanski won. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
No one's ever going to do like a snatch that Oscar.
More Hennessy at the Oscars, I think, would solve a lot of my Oscar criticism.
I have to say, by the way, you know how Jennifer Lawrence, I guess, was like drinking wine throughout the ceremony? How is she the first person to innovate smuggling wine into the room?
Right.
Yeah.
It's been like 90 years and finally people are drinking. Like, yes, more of that.
I mean, I feel like Elizabeth Taylor was drinking at the Oscars. Let's be real.
I do think there are some actors who like to drink, and I do think she was one of them.
Yeah.
It took a second.
So we got a Time's Up montage too, which, you know, in contrast with the Kobe Bryant and the Gary Oldman and the Ryan Seacrest of it all, felt sort of like the Academy trying to have its cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to see, you know, like Mira Sorvino and other people there, but it did sort of feel like it was just tacked into the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can move on.
Yeah.
And they had to. They knew that there's no possible way they couldn't have done something. And so, you know, it was like, well, you know, we got to do this. So
I will say, seeing Mira Sorvino and Annabella Ciora and Ashley Judd, it was just cool to see them there looking like movie stars, which they should still be, you know. So even if that was illusory, it felt in some way compensating for the horrors done to them.
I did object to the fish fucking movie being in that Time's Up montage.
Oh, that was weird.
It was talking about the diversity and everything that's happened in Hollywood, and then there's Sally Hawkins, like, humping a fish.
Signing I Love Gills to her husband. Or to her gay brother. I forget what their relationship is in the movie.
It had a gay person and a black person in it, which means that it was diversity.
That's right.
Never mind that Octavia Spencer was playing the same character from The Help. I think it was a crossover.
I would actually say it was even more the same character from Hidden Figures. Like the same sort of sauciness. Yeah, yeah.
I forgot.
Maybe there's a new movie where we find out that Octavia Spencer is just a time traveler. She plays a character who is all those people.
That's right. Oh, God, I love her though.
But speaking of The Shape of Water, a lot of people called it a quote-unquote safe win, and I'm not exactly sure what that truly means. You know, I didn't think that the film was my favorite of the year, certainly, but it wasn't safe in terms of picking, you know, The Darkest Hour.
Yeah. Also, I mean, that movie really has a kind of like magic realism quality, you know, like Gabriel Garcia Marquez, something like that. And by the way, I mean, we make jokes about the fish fucking. For the rest of my life, I'll make jokes about the fish fucking. It does make it a very unusual Best Picture win, I do think. You know, I mean, it's like kind of a cinematic fairy tale in certain ways, so maybe that feels safe.
Yeah.
But just the turns in the movie are at first surprising and weird and even a little uncomfortable before it resumes its whimsicality. I would just say that the problem with that movie is in the last quarter, then it becomes predictable. Then I'm sitting there watching the movie thinking, I know this is going to turn into some water ballet where we don't know if they live or die or go on romantically forever. And that's, of course, what happened because I'm real smart.
We've seen Splash. We've seen Splash.
Right, yes.
I think less about the actual content of the film. It seems safe in that, you know, the director was a Mexican man who was sort of overdue, so he's not, you know, another sort of blonde white dude winning an Oscar. The movie starred a woman. Like, it was all, but it's like, well, yeah, but kind of, and like, I guess we're giving it to another man. Like, it felt like Justin, you know, Octavius, you had a black person in the movie who got to talk a little bit.
Yeah, queer character.
So
yeah.
It wasn't like a crazy, just like, it's, you know, The Big Short or something where it's just like, here's 45 men talking for 3 hours.
Well, you know, yeah, it's definitely sick in the sense that the Oscars loves to, one, reward men for lifetime achievements more so than they do women.
Yeah.
The best actor category is literally men winning for roles that they should have won years ago because the Oscars seems to have some sort of vendetta against young men being talented.
Oh, yeah.
But they routinely give it to young actresses like a Jennifer Lawrence when, you know, they should be giving it to an older actress in that category who actually turned out a better performance.
Right. Best actor is very like Al Pacino, Scent of a Woman. It's very Daniel Day-Lewis and Lincoln, things like that.
I feel like they're also waiting to give Denzel another Oscar. They're like, let us just give you one more.
Of and course.
Like, oh, fine. And then like these are the movies he's picking and they're like, I guess we got to nominate him for this.
Right, you know, and then for director, it often feels that same way, you know? If it's safe, it's safe in the way that we love to celebrate men for telling these kinds of stories and not celebrating when women tell these kinds of stories.
And it's safe in contrast to Get Out more than anything. Because that was like, mm-hmm. I actually, for like 2 seconds, I allowed myself to think that Get Out might win Best Picture after Jordan won. And I think really, like, The Shape of Water is safe if you consider Get Out the other option.
Well, it also just tells you that, you know, La La Land came this close to winning last year. Shape of Water won this year. If you want to win a Best Picture Oscar or at least get nominated, you need to do a film that is an ode to classic Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, like,
it can't be set in classic Hollywood because Hail Caesar tried that.
Yep.
And didn't work out.
I actually think it's a little bit of a misnomer when people claim that Hollywood is super obsessed with this stuff. The first ever Best Picture set in Los Angeles is Crash, which is like 10 years ago. But I will say about The Shape of Water also, it is exceedingly rare that a Best Picture is just about a woman. I mean, the last one was Million Dollar Baby, you know, and then Chicago. And then I think before that, like Terms of Endearment. I guess you could argue Shakespeare in Love, too. But it's just super rare. And the fact is, I think we're living in this age where we're fooling ourselves into believing we're really, like, you know, exalting these stories. The fact is, a lot of people actively hate women's stories. So I think putting it out there and getting a Best Picture win for a movie starring a woman is still a triumph
of
in
course.
A major way.
And you probably know that specific statistic better than me. You know, the idea of the correlation between Best Actress winners or nominations with what's been nominated for Best Picture.
It's like shocking. Yes. Only recently, I mean, that's something that the 6 to 10 Best Picture nominees has helped a little bit. Then you get movies like Philomena and An Education in the Best Picture racket. But before that, no, like, go right down the list. Like, things nominated for Best Actress are rarely nominated for Picture, and they are almost always nominated for things like makeup. We, like, marginalize them in those categories.
But everyone who's usually nominated for Best Actor, the film that they're in, is usually nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, right, because we relate to them.
Yeah,
that's our story.
To men. When we're back, Lewis versus a computer. And we're back with Lewis versus a computer and Kara.
Kara's running the computer, so that's a very important part of
this. She is the computer that wore tennis shoes.
I love your hip current references, my God.
Coming from you.
I know, please, no. We're simpatico.
Didn't
here.
You just do a monologue about shampoo?
Yeah. It touched everybody in the room. I made it universal.
I do like that movie, mm-hmm. but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, I am going to ask Kara and a computer and Lewis 10 questions, and we'll see who gets the most right out of 10.
First, or just accuracy?
Yeah, you just shout out the answer first.
Okay.
First question, this is a category I call Name the Winner.
Okay.
I'm going to name nominees for things, and you have to tell me who won.
Oh, all right.
Here's Best Picture nominees. Dark Victory.
Nope, 1939, it's Gone with the Wind.
Lewis got it.
How about that, girl?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, guys, I didn't even get to type it.
Betty Davis's third nomination, her first loss.
Gone with the Wind beat Dark Victory, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, Love Affair, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington,
Ninotchka. Garbo.
Yeah.
This is not very SEO-friendly, by the way.
Stagecoach, Wizard of Oz, and Wuthering Heights.
Well, that went well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. I don't feel bad because it's Google, not me.
That's true.
It's true. For the record.
We'll try another one of those. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
2000, Gladiator.
Yeah.
How do I...
Yeah. Gladiator beat Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Aaron Brockovich, Traffic, and Chocolat.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something? I've never seen Chocolat.
That movie got nominated for a Best Picture.
Yes, it did.
Chocolat. Was that the one with Johnny Depp and was he
yeah,
was
the original that. The original Casey Affleck. The Oscars used to love him.
I mean, that movie.
I think the Oscars used to love him until he made The Tourist and 17 Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
The Chocolat was only the third Best Supporting Actor Black nominee ever. That's right.
Best Original Screenplay.
Oof, okay.
1962.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Splendor in the Grass.
No, that's technically 61. So, I mean, you're looking at the 62 ceremony. I'm going to go...
What?
Is it not Lawrence of Arabia?
No, it says winner 1962, Splendor in the Grass.
Right, that's it for 61. It's like the ceremonies in that year. This is a trivia thing that people fight about all the time. William Inge wrote that. Yeah, 61, Splendor in the Grass. Hold on. That's not what I'm going to go.
The Apartment.
That's the year before.
What?
Go one forward. Sweet Bird of Youth?
No. One more second.
Divorce Italian Style.
Oh, yes. That's really hard. Wow.
What the hell? Yeah.
All right, 2-1, I accept defeat.
Have you seen Divorce of Tanya Saw Lewis?
No, have you seen it?
I've seen it.
Oh.
It's plucky.
I bet. Wait, is that not Gina Lollobrigida? Who's in that?
Daniela Rocca.
Oh, very good. Very good.
No, I love an Italian movie. Oh, my God. All right. Best Supporting Actor.
Okay. Give me a year.
1973.
John Houseman, Paper Chase. I'm positive.
John. Joel Grey.
No, that's Devaney
Two. God damn it. I don't understand
that's
this.
The previous year.
I don't understand this.
Cabaret.
Why is Google... Hold up, Google, if you're listening.
74,
why
Robert
De Niro. Why the hell are you putting these... What is this?
It's a bone of contention with trivia people. Like, if you're talking about the 1973 Oscars, do you mean honoring the films of 73 or the year the ceremony took place? I would argue you always want to say it's for the year the movies are. So
no, it should be the year that the Oscars.
When he
are.
Says 73,
like the year it got the award.
It's an SEO problem. That's the issue.
Google.
I can actually name all the best supporting actors from that decade if you want me to.
I'm sure
74,
Google...
Robert De Niro. 75, George Burns. 76, you know Jason Robards. 77, Jason Robards.
I think this game is over, and I think that this taught us a very important lesson about Google, SEO, and...
gay people who are on the spectrum, maybe.
I'm not playing games with you again.
I win.
When we're back.
Lewis wins.
When we're back, keep it. Keep It is brought to you by IFC Films' The Death of Stalin, a comedy of terrors from the creator of Veep and In the Loop. Steve Buscemi and Monty Python's Michael Palin lead an award-winning ensemble in this hilarious political satire, which reinterprets the true events of Soviet succession in Moscow, 1953, when tyrannical director Joseph Stalin drops dead and his parasitic cronies square off in a frantic power struggle to be the next Soviet leader. I don't know anything about history, so I'm not going to make any jokes about Joseph Stalin. I don't want to offend anybody and lose this podcast. The one-liners fly fast as the political fortunes fall in Death of Stalin, though, and critics are already calling it a masterpiece, one of the most hilarious films of the 21st century and the political satire we need right now. Rolling Stone calls it brilliant and reminds you that any resemblance to modern world affairs is not a coincidence. The Death of Stalin, in theaters March 9th. And now the part of the show that everybody tunes in for, it's Keep It. What are we saying no thank you to this week, Kara?
This week I'm saying no thank you to Not Peter from The Bachelor. I believe his name is Ari, but from now on we're just calling him Not Peter, who should have been The Bachelor. And the finale was this week, and he picked a brunette, and then he dumped her like a day late. I mean, not a day later in real time, but the way we watched it. So he basically brought cameras in to like a meetup with her and was like, yo, I think I like that other girl more. Never mind. Even though you're my fiance and I proposed to you on TV like a minute ago. And also she's like sobbing, understandably. And she's like, just go, just go. And he's just sitting there. And I'm like, I can't even fathom someone doing that to me because they know that they would die. So it's hard for me to even put myself in that situation. But I just like, one, I feel like, I don't know how much the producers know. I never know with that stuff. But it felt like even for The Bachelor, kind of a new low. Like, you're setting this woman up to just be completely humiliated. And usually they humiliate themselves on their own. You don't need to help them.
So I don't watch the white seasons of The Bachelor.
I don't either,
but,
to be honest.
This seems exactly like what I would expect from the show, given Unreal.
Right.
Like, it seems like something Rachel would have orchestrated for the end.
Right.
The, you have to pick someone else for this big dramatic moment.
After you've already picked her.
Yeah.
Like, you've already picked her. And I think it was something like, you know, when they get engaged or whatever, they don't get to see each other for a few months while the show is airing because they don't want people to know who won, but they'll do like sort of secret coordinated meetups where everyone makes sure that they can spend time together and no one sees. And it's like, you did it during one of those, dude, and like asked for camera. I assume cameras aren't usually there.
The producers had to know he was about
he
to
was about to
her.
Do that. Girl, I think you should sue all of them. You probably sign a contract, give it a whirl, get me on the jury. You're getting all the money.
I bet in her contract it's like, your engagement will be ruined, you know.
Listen, if Idris Elba could get Molly out of that game, I'm sure he could help whoever this plucky brunette is. Lewis, what are you keeping this week?
It sounds like I'm about to tell RuPaul to keep it, but his apology was so sufficient that it won't be a keep it to him. I'll get to who it's for. What happened this week was RuPaul in an interview with The Guardian was talking about trans women and drag, and basically he was talking about how the lines are blurred when somebody is trans and like basically treating them like Olympic athletes who are doping or like, you know, giving themselves some sort of advantage by transitioning.
He even tweeted something shady like, you can dope and still be an athlete, just not in the Olympics. Like he was spilling some sort of tea.
Right. It's like you're literally saying trans people are Flojo? Like what? I have no guess as to what that's about. But
Flojo did not dope, by the way. Do not sully Flojo's name.
Some
on
people
this
would argue
podcast.
The sport has been ruined ever since 1988. Moving on. but what drove me crazy was, so there were two sides on Twitter. Like people were really mad at RuPaul. Some people defended RuPaul. But what bothered me was Bob the drag queen, who's a former winner of the show. He's great. He's hilarious. He said something like, sometimes I think our community is just tearing itself apart, something along those lines. I just want to say, I think this is one of the ways in which the gay community is very productive. Maybe we're a little tougher than we need to be, a little bit more insulting than we need to be sometimes. But to me, this was like one of those good infighting situations that unifies our message, makes us realize like this is an insulting thing to say about trans people. RuPaul eventually came around too after trying to double down on his original statement. And I just don't think this is a read in our community that both sides had points and were mad about it.
Right. There was this notion too from some people on Twitter, the fact that we shouldn't be calling RuPaul out, you know, because he's done so much for the community. But it's also this community that he's talking about doesn't have the platform and the celebrity that he has. So how else are they supposed to reach him besides tweeting at him?
Totally. Also, I mean, I'm not new to the idea that celebrities I love mess up sometimes. I think a perfect example would be Joan Rivers, who, you know, legendary comic. I would say I personally owe a lot to that style of like making fun of men to their face, just like she's revolutionary, whatever. She also, if you remember her E! Show, basically believed writers should be her slaves, and she didn't correct it or figure out a deal for them. So that's a part of her legacy forever, unfortunately. RuPaul, meanwhile, has apologized, so that, as far as I'm concerned, is now wiped from his record for the most part.
Right. And it's reasonable for people to call him out, you know? The joke on, like, Tyra Male from America's Next Top Model in his show used to be called She-Male.
Yep.
And he changed that, even though he put up a fuss about it. And he put up a fuss about, you know, using the word tranny on his show, too, even though, you know, transgender people told him that that was a slur.
Right.
And he should not use it, even though it was fun that he was throwing it around, you know, like, in the 80s and 90s, like, it's 2018 now.
Right. That's also, it's just, that's part of being a trailblazer is, you know, in certain ways, is people are going to expect you to keep that up, and they're going to be critical when you don't.
I thought it was a very productive conversation for the LGBTQ community to have. I'm going to wrap it up with my keep it, which is Oscars related in the sense that, for some reason, ABC decided to ruin my evening by airing an Alec Baldwin talk show.
Ooh!
After the Oscars, I think we all caught the first few minutes of that show and went, what are you doing?
Also, I mean, my main thing with that, which I wasn't even really listening, the chairs, they have them facing each other. Have you ever seen a talk show in the history of talk shows set up like that? Like the whole point is you, so all of the shots are over the shoulder. You can never see both of them at the same time. It's like there's a reason they pivot the chairs so that you're sort of next to each other. And it was crazy.
It's very old TV. It reminds me of like Tom Snyder in the 80s or something.
He thinks he's doing Frost Nixon, but Alec Baldwin is asking Jerry Seinfeld about the sneakers he wore when he first appeared on The Late Show.
Also, here's the thing. I think Alec Baldwin is a pretty good interviewer. That said, nothing about me is ever saying, I need Alec Baldwin to talk more and be on TV. That's gone awry a half dozen times.
Also, and why does he want to do this?
He's also spent the past few weeks like defending Woody Allen, defending Gary Oldman, attacking women on Twitter, and basically being a trash box. So I really don't want to see him, you know, talking to celebrities right now because I don't want to hear him chiming in on these important conversations that people need to be having right now. And also just to debut that first episode where he's talking to Jerry Seinfeld and Kate McKinnon after the Oscars, it just felt so unnecessary to pop culture or the cultural conversation right now that was like, when did you film this?
Let's 10 be
years
honest,
ago?
You probably won't be watching it for long. There's no way that's, I mean, please.
I think that's
there's no way
true.
This show is lasting.
Listen,
beyond this.
Megyn Kelly is still walking tight ropes with Woo! Bears on NBC right now, so anything's possible.
Frantically serving a brunch and saying, aren't we having fun?
I think Burn Notice is still on TV. I don't know. Alec Baldwin might last a few years. Karen Lewis, thank you so much for being here to
You're
talk
welcome.
About the Oscars with me.
I'd like to thank myself, too. And
I
the
would
Academy.
Like to, I would like to thank Lewis.
Thank
and
you,
Lewis's
Kara.
And
Lewis's brain. Aw.
Which has been very helpful.
Separate entities. We rarely
yes,
get
very
along.
Very different.
Yeah.
Let's keep it.
Turner and Hooch, any combination. Any duo. Butch Cassidy and She Ready.